Well, we have to talk about a very, we don't have to, but this is what I want to talk about. A very complicated subject that I have in my mind a lot the last few weeks. And I mentioned at the beginning of this year last week, you have to try to understand it on a deeper level. We spoke about the relationship between the death of Tzaddikim and the Churban Beis HaMikdash and the destruction of the Temple. And since we are just passing through a time where two great Tzaddikim passed away, the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha and the Klausenberger Rebbe Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and it's the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Bein HaMetzarim. So I want to try to bring these things together. It's a little bit of a difficult union. To try to define the nature of the time that we're in right now, the time between Shavuot v'Tammuz and the 9th of Av and Tisha B'Av, what is this time? What is this time? What's happening during this time? So if you look in the halachas svarim, in the poskim, you'll find that there are two terms that are being used to describe these days that are called ben hametzarim, which literally means between the straits, between the difficult times, between ben hametzarim. So there are two general terms that are being used. The Magen Avraham, one of the great poskim commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, so the Magen Avraham says that in his discussion of the question about whether or not we're allowed to make a shechiyanu during this time, to make a shechiyanu on a new clothing or shechiyanu on a new fruit, the question of whether or not you're allowed to make a shechiyanu, so the Magen Avraham says that you're not allowed to make a shechiyanu. Again, I'm not getting to the halacha, and Shabbos you are allowed, and there are different opinions, but the overall problem that the Magen Avraham says making shechiyanu during this time is that these days between Shavuot v'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av are Yemei Puraniyut, Yemei Puranius. Yemei Puranius means that they are days of tragedies, of calamities. Yemei Puranius, difficult days, days of tragedies. The Vilna Gaon, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon says that these days between the 17th of Tammuz and Tisha B'Av are Yemei Avelus, days of mourning, or a Minig of Avelus, it's a custom of mourning. We have a custom to mourn during this time. It's a Minig of Avelus during this time. So to say, I can understand what the Magen Avraham is saying, that it's Yemei Perani is, that there were tragedies that were taking place. We know that during this time between the 17th of Tammuz, between the 17th of Tammuz, and Tisha B'Av, is there Rambam Hilchos? I need the Rambam Hilchos Tainis, the first chelik. Rambam, can you go? I understand that during this time that things were getting worse and worse. The situation there just always deteriorating terribly. So I understand that there are days of calamities. And historically also, we all know that the 3 weeks, lo aleinu, things should only go well for everybody, but during this time, there have been more than the normal share of Jewish suffering. Jews suffer. The Goyim have never been particular to only cause their suffering for 3 weeks. They try to spread out for the entire year. But somehow during these 3 weeks, things have always been more difficult. So we understand what the Magen Avraham is saying, that these days are called Yemei Peronius, days of calamities or tragedies. But what the Gra is saying, the Vilna Gaon says that it's Yemei Avelus, that these are days of mourning. So I understand that the 17th of Tammuz is a day of mourning, because of the things that happened on that day. We'll read the Rambam in a moment, but of the things that went wrong on that day. So I understand that the 17th of Tammuz is a day of mourning. And I understand also, of course, that Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning. So the things that happened on Tisha B'Av. What exactly is the nature of the mourning of the Avelut, of the Avelus that exists between the 2 days? What exactly are we mourning over? What specifically happened? The, the tragedies that the Gemara lists, for which we are obligated to mourn over, are tragedies that took place on two specific days. On the day of the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th day of Av. Those are when those tragedies over which we are commanded to mourn, those are when those tragedies took place, specifically those days. In between, so to say that we're in between the tragedies, okay, and that some things that weren't so great happened during that time, we also understand. But what's the nature of the mourning? Over what, exactly? Specifically, what are we mourning over during that time? Now the Rambam, we can get the Rambam, I'll say, in the meantime we'll start to say over the Rambam. The Rambam in the fifth chapter of the Laws of Ta'anit, the fifth chapter of the Hilchos Ta'anit. So the Rambam tells us the five things that happen on the 17th of Tammuz and why we fast on the 17th of Tammuz. That includes the sin of the golden calf, the Chet Ha'egel, that our ancestors sinned with the golden calf. And it includes the fact that the sacrificial order was the Karbanis, the Karban Talmud was no longer able to be brought, and that the statue was brought into the Heichal, into the Beis HaMikdash, and Avodah Zarah, and the Sefer Torah was burnt. So the Rambam tells us those five things, the breaking of the Luchos. So the Rambam tells us those five things. And then the Rambam tells us the five things that happened on Tisha B'Av. And the five things on Tisha B'Av, the Churban Bayis Rishon, the Churban Bayis Sheni, the destruction of the first temple, the destruction of the second temple. And the Rambam concludes that with the destruction of Beisar, of Beitar, of the city of Beitar. You know that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, of the second Beis HaMikdash, you all know that there was an uprising that was led by Bar Kokhba, who had the support of Rabbi Akiva and the Gedolei Yisrael. And this uprising was tragically concluded with the death of Bar Kokhba and the horrible massacre of the Jews in Beisar. And what I wanted to read you inside, I just forgot to bring my Rambam, but I wanted to read you inside is that the way the Rambam ends that halacha, the way the Rambam ends that halacha over there, is he tells us about the mistake that was made regarding Mashiach. That Rabbi Akiva, who was the Gadol Hador, who was the greatest leader of the generation, that Rabbi Akiva himself made this terrible mistake. It was a toast, it was a mistake. They thought that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Him and the other Gedolei Yisrael thought that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. And as a result of the massacre of Beitar, became clear that that wasn't true. And the Rambam includes this disappointment or this mistake as part of the Avelus of Tisha B'Av, part of the mourning of Tisha B'Av. An essential part of the mourning of Tisha B'Av is that on that day we recognize the mistake that we had made, that a mistake was made regarding who Mashiach was, who Mashiach was not. Thank you very much. Let me read you the words of the Rambam. Tisha B'Av Chamisha Dvar Me'iru Bo. The Rambam is in the fifth chapter of Hilchos Ta'anit, the third halacha. Nigzal Yisrael Midrash Leikon Shel Aris, the Gzeira that we can't come to the land. V'Charva Bayis B'Rishona, U'B'Shniya, the first and second Beis HaMikdash. V'Nilkda Ir Gedola U'Beis HaShema. And the city was destroyed, the great city of Beitar was destroyed. V'Hoyu Ba'alofim U'Revovus Mi'Yisrael. And there were thousands upon thousands of Jews who lived in Beitar who were killed. Now that would be enough for us to mourn. That's where the halacha should end, right? Thousands of Jews were killed in Beisar. That should be the end of this halacha. The Rambam goes on. The Jews had a great king. And the great sages
And all the Jewish people, the Rambam says, Dimu Kol Yisrael U'Gedolei HaChachomim. Kol Yisrael U'Gedolei HaChachomim. Shul Melech HaMashiach, and he was Mashiach. The Nafal B'Yad HaRomiyim, and he was killed by the Romans, V'Nergu Kulam, by the Tzorah G'dolu K'mo Churban Beis HaMikdash. That the death of Mashiach, or the disappointment of the Jewish people, hoping that Bakalko was Mashiach, and he turned out not to be, because whoever dies cannot be Mashiach. So, this was a Tzorah G'dolu, the Rambam says, like the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. This was as great a tragedy as the destruction of the temple. On that same day that is prepared for tragedy, the area of Yerushalayim, the Har Habayis, was plowed, was destroyed, it was mowed down. So the Rambam is fascinating. The Jews died. We understand it's Avelus as we mourn over the death of the Jews. But what's the Rambam bringing in this whole story, the Bar Kokhba, and what happened with Bar Kokhba, and it turns out that he wasn't Mashiach? So let's learn. I found something fascinating in the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar is one of the classic commentaries in Chumash. The Kli Yakar says in Parshas Maaseh, the Kli Yakar says, brings the Gemara. The Gemara is in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yud Ches. The Gemara is telling us about some Gedalia, you know? Just when you think that you made it through Rosh Hashanah and you have a break until Yom Kippur, so you have that fast day right after Rosh Hashanah, right? Some Gedalia. So Gedalia ben Achikam was killed. So the Gemara is wondering, to make a public fast day because of the death of one person? All right, he was very important and he was certainly instrumental in the malchus of the Jewish people being upheld during that time, but for one person? So the Gemara's conclusion over there is, Lamdacha, this teaches us, Sheshkula Mises Tzadikim, Kesreifas Beis Elokein. So the Gemara says it teaches us that the death of a Tzadik is equal to the burning of the temple. And that the death of a tzaddik like Gedalia ben Achikam is as tragic as the burning of the Beis HaMikdash, and it's as good a reason to fast as the destruction of the temple. So that's what the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah. In the Yalkut, in the Medrash says that the death of the, not, the Medrash says that the silukam shel tzaddikim, the death of the tzaddik is kosher silukam shel tzaddikim yoseh michorban beis hamikdash. That the death of a tzaddik is worse than the destruction of the temple. Worse. So the Kli Yakar is asking what's going on. The Gemara says that the death of a tzaddik is equally tragic as the destruction of the beis hamikdash. The same. But the Medrash says that the siluk of the tzaddik, which literally would mean the departure or the disappearance of the tzaddik, is worse than the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Worse. So he says a remarkable thing. I'm going to pay close attention to this because from this I'm going to try to build up a new understanding, or to try to come to an understanding of what Ben HaMetzarim is, what this time of the year is. He explains that there are two stages in the destruction of the temple, and there are two stages in the death of a tzaddik. Two stages, two distinct stages that you have to be somewhat of a spiritually attuned person to hear. The first, with the Beis HaMikdash, the Churban Beis HaMikdash means the actual physical structure is still standing. The structure is still there. But the Eiris HaRuchnian, the spiritual content, the spiritual epnimius, the spiritual essence of the Beis HaMikdash, what the Kli Yakar calls the glory, the splendor, the hayd, the ziv, the hadar, the splendor and glory of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed before the walls were knocked down. When the place was defiled by the goyim, with the placing of the Avodah Zarah, the idols into the temple and so on and so forth, and the desecration of the altar, there's such a thing that the Beis HaMikdash has an neshama. It's not just a fancy building. It's not a fancy building. There are fancier buildings. We don't daven facing the Taj Mahal. It's not because it's a fancy building. It's the Ruach Nias. It has spiritual life. It has a neshama of the Beis HaMikdash.
So the first stage of the destruction, the Klei Yoker says, the first stage of the destruction, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, means the death, the spiritual death of the building. The neshama departs. The spiritual light, the energy, the force of what the Beis HaMikdash contained, the nuclear reactor of holiness, died. It was unplugged. That's step number one in the Churban. The second step of the Churban, he says that first step is called Churban Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the temple. The second stage is called Sreifas Beis Elokeinu, the burning, the physical destruction of the building is the second stage. Now you know that the physical burning wasn't really complete until the 10th day, right? The fire was still going until the 10th of Av. But the physical burning, that's the Sreifas Beis HaMikdash, the Sreifas Beis Elokeinu, the burning of the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the building, the Chomer. Similarly, he says with the Tzaddikim, this is a remarkable insight with the Tzaddikim. What's with the Tzaddikim? There are two stages in the death of a Tzaddik. There are two stages of the death of a tzaddik. And I think that this particular way of understanding the tzaddik's death can be most understood with the two tzaddikim who died recently and what they had to go through until they were physically freed from this world. There are two stages in the death of a tzaddik. The first is called the siluk hatzaddik, the departure, the disappearance of the tzaddik. And that the Klei Yoker says is the pasuk of the Chachmas Chachamav Ubinas Nevoinav Tisaser, which means that somehow the soul of the tzaddik has left the world. He's still alive. The physical body is functioning. Life systems are all intact. He's breathing, the heart is beating, he's got a pulse. He's still in the world. But there's been a siluk of the tzaddik, a stalkus. The koach of the tzaddik, the energy, the force, the impact. The soul of the tzaddik is already not holding by this world. What that means, we'll have to talk about. The soul is already not contained in the world. The istalkus of tzaddik. That's the first stage. The disappearance of the tzaddik's wisdom, the disappearance of his influence, the disappearance of his splendor, his glory. The splendor and glory of the tzaddik is gone. That's step number one. That's called the histalkus, the siluk. The second stage is the mises hatzadik when the tzadik dies. It's physical death. The building crumbles. The building falls apart. And then the Klei Yoker ends and he says, so we have two sources in Chazal. One tells us that the death of a tzadik equals the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The other says that the death of the tzaddik is worse than the Churban Beis HaMikdash. It says, "Kasha silukam shel tzaddikim yosim Churban Beis HaMikdash." So the Klei Yoker says a fantastic thing. As far as the actual physical death compared to the physical destruction of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, they're equal. Just like the Beis HaMikdash, in a physical sense, the building, the stones of the Beis HaMikdash give life to the physical world. In other words, the physical structure of the Beis HaMikdash helps the baby get over his or her fever that night. The physical structure is good for the physical world, brings blessings to the physical world. So too, the tzaddik being physically alive, even though his neshama is already not holding with this world, but being physically alive, the tzaddik's physical life gives life to the world. Tzaddik yisoid olam, he's the foundation of the world, he gives life to the world. Yosef HaTzaddik was living mysteriously in disguise, not even really being able to live in the full sense of the Jew. In Mitzrayim, the whole world was being fed by him. Physically. The tzaddik. That's equal. The building of the Beis HaMikdash and the flesh and blood and bones of the tzaddik. That's equal. But when it comes to the spiritual light, he says, there the Medrash says, Kasha silukam shel tzaddikim yosem michurban Beis HaMikdash.
These are his words. Nefesh ha-tzadik nosen chiyus v'kiyum yoser mikol haruchni shahoy v'beit ha-mikdash.
I would never have guessed this on my own. The Kleyaka says that the soul of the tzaddik gives more life and more spirituality to the universe than the Beis HaMikdash.
L'fish tzaddik echad yesod olam. Because that one singular tzaddik, even one tzaddik, is called by Chazal the foundation of the universe. Kol ha'olam nizam. The whole world was being fed because of Chanina b'ni. The whole world was being fed because of one tzaddik. Because of a Yosef tzaddik, because of a Chanina, then Dosa, the whole world was being sustained.
V'nishmosu chatzuvu mitachas kisi ha-kovet. And the soul of the tzaddik is kept, is engraved under God's throne. Al-kein yesh ba kedusha gedoyla. Therefore, the soul of the tzaddik has greater holiness than the Beis HaMikdash.
So the Kleyaka ends up and says, that's what it means. That the siluk, the disappearance of the spiritual light and energy and force and power and influence of the tzaddik is more difficult than the churban Beis HaMikdash, than the disappearance of the spiritual energy of the Beis HaMikdash. We're not talking about the physical structure. The death of the tzaddik and the death of the building are equal. But the disappearance of the spiritual life force is greater, is more tragic by the death of the tzaddik than by the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash.
So it seems, based upon this fantastic insight of the Kleyaka, it seems that there are two distinct stages of the Churban. The 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av. The 17th of Tammuz is the departure of the soul, the disappearance of the energy, the neshama of the Beis HaMikdash, the neshama of the tzaddik is the 17th of Tammuz, the soul. But then there's that lingering of the body until Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is the death of the tzaddik. Tisha B'Av is the physical death of the Beis HaMikdash. Now let's understand these two stages. And now here it starts to get a little complicated. Everything that I'm going to say now, I'm trying very hard to put many, many covers on, to say only that which we need. And if there's anything that's not clear, please just assume that it wasn't explained properly and don't try to make any ridiculous conclusions. In the Kisvei Ari we're taught, I'm saying in a very watered-down, simplistic way, and I'm hoping that it'll be more for me for doing that, but I'm trying to give over as it was taught in a way without causing God forbid confusion. There are two levels of human perception. There are two ways that a human being understands. There are two levels of perception. There are two ways to take two levels where profound, deep, mysterious, sublime thoughts are carried into our everyday lives. Two ways. Hashem runs the world, the master of the universe runs the world according to a system of 10 spheres, as you know. There are 10 levels of revelation, 10 ways of revealing his presence in the world. The three most profound stages of Hashem's thoughts, of Hashem's deepest thoughts, as Hashem brings into this universe. I've spoken to you about this before. Those are called Chabad. Chabad. Chochma Bina V'Das. Chabad. After Chabad, after Chochma Bina V'Das, then we have the lower stages of the universe. It includes Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and finally Malchus. The entire universe is controlled by these higher thoughts of Hashem from the world of Chabad,
entering into the lower realm of how Hashem acts in this world, his midos of chesed, of kindness, and of strength, and so on, and of truth, and of compassion, so on and so forth, how the higher thoughts filter down through the attributes of how Hashem acts in this world, until finally it reaches the last and final stage of what we actually see in our lives that's called Malchus, the kingdom of Hashem. And the human being was made in the same way. Every one of us functions as an interaction of these 10 ways. The highest part of the human being is called mochin, the mind, the thoughts, the highest awareness, chabad. It's called mochin, thoughts. The deepest intellect, the most profound, deepest thoughts. It's called mochin. Mochin, that's chabad. Chachma bin adas. The distinction between those three levels is not for tonight. But chabad means that there are certain perceptions that a person has that are the deepest possible perceptions that you're capable of. And then the question is, now that there exists within me this level of mochan, a certain kind of an awareness, how does this intellectual, profound awareness enter into my emotional system? And how does it ultimately translate into what I do in my life, into malchus, into what I actually do? You know that there are many things that you and I know about and we believe in and we know are true. But when it comes to actually doing them, it's not so simple, right? If you or I would do everything that we really believed in, so it would be a lot better than it is right now. We have a certain amount of mochin, a certain amount of perception of chabad, that for whatever reason don't make the mochin, this intellect is not able to make itself known through the lower qualities of the emotions and to get to malchus where I live this way. L'maisa, this is how I live. This is what I understand. You know, there are Jews throughout history who have died for the sake of God. People who aren't religious at all. Who never kept mitzvahs at all, but they died. No. That means that there was something up there in the world of mochin, obviously. Something was caught up above in the highest perception of who they were. But somehow, it never really made its way known. It never was known to that person until at some point he understood that if you go ahead with what this guy wants of you, you're cutting yourself off from the master of the world. And at that point, all of a sudden, there was a remarkable attachment from the highest realm of Chabad down to the last level of Malchus, when the person will say, take my life, I'm going to die for God's kingdom. And we didn't see at any point during his life that the higher mochin that was obviously there, that perception of godliness was there all those years, but we never saw it as it was interwoven into his actual emotions. No, I don't care about Yiddish God, what do I care? He doesn't care. You see somebody davening, you know, shaking, closing his eyes, thinks, it didn't move him, didn't inspire him, he says, it's crazy. And then that person is saying a Kriya Shema himself and giving his life up for Hashem. As is explained at length in Tanya in the 18th, 19th, and 20th chapters, that this comes from a higher mochin, there's a higher intellect, a profound understanding that somehow didn't make itself known through the lower realms of Chesed and Tvur and Tiferes and Netzach, Hod and Yisod, until it didn't get the malchus. Didn't get to that last stage. Now the Arizal taught us that the way that Chabad, the way that the higher awareness, this is a difficult subject, and you have to use your Chabad to get it. The Arizal taught us that the way that the higher perceptions of Chabad make themselves known to the lower characteristics of Chesed, Gvur, Tiferes, Nesach, Hod, and Yesod, that way is called the way of Halbasha, which literally is translated as being enclosed. That there are higher thoughts that become enclosed, I'm going to explain this, enclosed in our emotions. Higher thoughts, just like Hashem's higher thoughts, Kivyachol, become enclosed in the lower attributes, or somehow are revealed through the lower attributes. So too, in a human being, the higher thoughts, when they penetrate and enter into the realm of emotions, it's called that they are now enclosing the emotions. The emotions are enclosed, are connected to the higher perception of Chabad. When that
level of perception, together with the emotions, continues to travel down to the level of malchus, where the person actually is able to change his or her life and live according to that perception, when the higher realm of Chabad goes all the way down through Chesed, Gvur, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod, it goes through all those attributes in your life, your emotional, your feelings, your awareness, all those things, until you're able to actually live and carry out that life, that in your life. When that happens, it's called a ha'ara, an illumination of Malchus. That Malchus, the lower, lemaisa, the practical aspect of your life, is illuminated by that light that came down from above. It's called illumination. There's enclosing and it's called, and there's illumination. Illumination means light, when something is lit up by something. So let me make this simple now. These are the terms, let me make them simple. I'll try to make it as simple as possible. Listen. One of the first things that every Jewish child is taught is Moshe Kibel Torah Mesinai, right? Moshe received the Torah from Har Sinai. And then what's after that? Mesar Yeshua. And he passed it over to Yeshua, and Yeshua passed it over to Niskeim, Tanshi, and so on and so forth. Until the Anshe Knesset Gdola, the men of the Great Assembly, taught it to the Jewish people. Moshe Kibel Torah Mesinai. Umesar Yeshua. He received it, and he gave it. There are two ways that a person learns something. There are two ways that information is passed on. Two ways. One way is called Mesira, handing it over, passing it over, revealing and giving over. The other is the more typical, the classical, simple way, which is called Limud. What's Limud? Teaching and learning. It does not say Moshe Kibel Torah Mesinai Vilomdo LeYoshua. It doesn't say that Moshe Rabbeinu taught the Torah to Yeshua. It says he passed it on to Yeshua. It doesn't say he taught it to Yeshua. If you or I would receive the Torah, I would teach it to my students. That would be my job. It should say Moshe Kibel Torah Mesinai Moshe Loma Torah MeHashem. Let's say better. Moshe Rabbeinu learned the Torah from Hashem. The Lomdali Yoshua, Yoshua Lomdal Nevim, and Nevim Lomdal, and so on and so forth. It should say that Moshe Rabbeinu learned the Torah from Hashem, and then he taught the Torah to the successive masters of the tradition. That's what it should say, no? You learn something, you teach something. The Chazal don't say that. Chazal say, Moshe Kibel Torah Mesinai, Umesar Yoshua. He gave it over. He passed it over. I don't even know. Transmitted it. I mean, the words in English are not. There aren't. I don't know of any words in English that can properly contain that message of what it means umnesara, to hand over something like that. It doesn't mean you understand to hear. Whatever it means, a mesira. It means complete mesira. Complete. The first, this higher order of teaching that's called Umisara Yoshua, handing over something. How should I explain that to you? You can't explain it in words. You can't explain it in words. When I was correcting last week and 2 weeks ago about how the problem with our generation is not that there aren't enough shiurim. There are plenty of classes to go to, more I think than any other time in Jewish history. There are classes to attend. There are yeshivas, more yeshivas than ever existed you have now. There's never been in Jewish history as many yeshivas as you have now. To go, like I mentioned to you last week, I think, to go to a class on Tehillim, you can go to the class Tehillim, so you know Tehillim, inside, outside, Malbim with the Radak and all the Mefarshim and all the fancies of Rav Shashavol Hirsch and the Chassidus Yisrael, all Tehillim. But give me one old-fashioned Jewish grandmother that knew how to say Tehillim and to give that over to the children. They could give it over to the children. You can't say that. There's a certain level of perception that Rabbi Nachman calls, in the words of David HaMelech, it's called Ani Yodati. What should I tell you? I know that there's a God. Ani Yodati Ki Godel Hashem Yikol HaElokim. I know that God is great. Go ask one of these people that died for the sake of Hashem, even though he never kept mitzvahs. And say to him, interview him, as he's lying there dying, say, what are you doing? You're not religious. Why don't you just go along with this guy? What are you doing?
She'll tell you, be quiet, ani yadaiti.
I know. I know something, I can't tell you why I'm doing this, but I know that this is what I have to do.
To give over a mesoira, a mesira, of handing over the kishkes.
That's not information. It's not something that you, it's not something you could study in the, you could study like an SAT course.
It's ani yadaiti. I know with the knowledge that I can't speak of because it's so deep, it's so profound, it's so hidden even to myself at times. It's on such a level of moichin, of awareness, of Chabad, that it doesn't, it's not something you can teach or talk about. It can't be contained in words.
Moshe's way of giving over to Yehoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, when he gave to Yehoshua, it says in the Torah, V'nasata mehodcha alav. Moshe Rabbeinu gave him his splendor, and he placed his splendor within Yehoshua. No, what does that mean? How do you teach somebody splendor? What does it mean to give your splendor to somebody? What does that mean? You know, they have people, they sell, in Florida, you could buy a can of sunshine. You ever see such a thing? People pay money, they buy a can of sunshine, they bring it back with a can of sunshine. I saw such a thing. I mean, I didn't see the sunshine in the can, but I saw that there's a can of sunshine. And they sell such things. No, what does that mean? You can't touch sunshine. It is, and if you felt it, you're fortunate. And if you enjoyed it, it's good. You give somebody splendor? So look what the Baal Turim says over there. Look what the Baal Turim says on that passage, V'nasata mehodcholav. What's that? Balowska, the part. Look what it says over there. The Baal Turim says that that's referring to Maise Mekava and Maise Bracious. In our terminology, it's referring to the secrets of Kabbalah, the deeper teachings of Torah, Maise Bracious, the workings of creation, the workings of the chariot, the secrets of Torah. It doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu just, of course he taught Yehoshua the Gemara, he taught him the Mishnayos, he taught, fine. But the hold of Moshe Rabbeinu, how can you give to Yehoshua the light, the hold? How can you give that over to another human being? The answer is not with teaching. It's not an academic course. You can't major in Kabbalah in college. Kabbalah, the truth, the deepest mysteries of the Torah are given me pelos and from one person's mouth to another Jew's ear. With a mikveh and with davening. Not with a course in college. Or buying some book. Buying some book, you know, Kabbalah made simple. That's not how you give over splendor and glory. And that's not how you make God-fearing Jews either. And with all of our schools and with the classes and the seminars and the teachings and all this, our children are still running around and they can't focus on holiness. Because v'nasata mehodcholav, we're not giving to them, we're teaching them. But to give over a neshama, to hand over who you are, and to be able, not in words, it takes a certain way of looking at the children. It's a certain way that you tilt your head. It's when the children see that you get up early in the morning. It's when the children see that you go to sleep late at night. It's when the children see that you die for the sake of God. There was a tzaddikus that said, there was a great tzaddikus that said, you know, there were Jewish women that they went into the mikveh in the frozen waters, and the Jews, when a lot of those Jews from Lithuania, they had to go, unfortunately, to Siberia, and they spent winters in the freezing cold of Siberia. And they had no place, but in order they should be able to have children and to continue normal lives, they would go into the ice water. So this tzaddikus said that from those women who went into ice water were born children who later on would be able to go into the fires for the sake of Hashem. We don't have, it's not so common anymore to see Jews who are going into ice water for his sake. That's the Messiah. That's the Moshe, Kibel Torah, Messiah Yeshua, Sisrei Torah, the deeper mysteries of Torah. Nobody in the world knows the reason for the red cow, right? The Paradoma? We don't know. What did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu? L'cha ani megala. To you, it doesn't say to you, l'cha ani melameid. I'm teaching it to you. It doesn't say that. It says, l'cha ani megala. To you, I will reveal this truth. It's a difference. It's a difference. It's not a chavrusa. It's not just, he's sitting and learning with somebody. L'cha ani megala. It's a gimli. It's a revelation. It's a giving over of a pnim, of essence. In the morning we make two brachas.
In the morning we make two brachas. We say in the bracha of the Torah, we make a bracha, Hamalameit Torah la'amo Yisrael, right? We thank Hashem for teaching Torah to the Jewish people. Hamalameit Torah la'amo Yisrael. Hashem taught us. Teaching us means what? Teaching us means malchus. What does malchus mean? Malchus means again. What do? How do I wash my hands? How do I put on tefillin? How do I keep Shabbos? Is this kosher or is it not kosher? What is the meaning of this Gemara here in Bava Kamma? What's the Pshat and Rashi and Chumash? And so on and so forth. That's malchus. Malchus you teach. Lamaita, you teach. The teach, Melamed, that's called a Ha'ara, an illumination. Illumination means, this is how you do it. This is what you do. For the higher Meichin, for the higher thoughts, that travel through the emotional attributes until they get to Malchus. Malchus is something that can be taught. This is what you do. Lamaita, this is what you do. But we make another brach. The bracha that we say before Shema, which in certain situations can be used if you didn't say the bracha, if you forgot to say, you couldn't say the bracha in the morning. That's the bracha of Ahavas Olam, of Ahava Rabba. And over there, we don't say that Hashem teaches the Torah to the Jewish people. What do we say there? We say, Hashem placed within our hearts the wisdom. Not teaching us. It's not a lesson. It's not a shiur. It's the same belief. Look at the whole thing there. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said that the surest way to shorten the Golus is by saying Ahava Rabba, Ahava Zom, to say along Ahava Rabba, to put your heart into Ahava Rabba. When they asked Ramea Simcha, the great Or Sameach, the Meshech Chochma, how was it that as such a young man you were able to write such a Meshech Chochma, you wrote such an amazing sefer? He says, it's not because of my brilliance, it's because I put my heart into saying Ahava Rabba, that bracha. The Ahava Rabba, the same belief, Beinu, Beinu, Ahava, Lahas, Lishma, Limma, Lamas, Lamas, that's the same belief, Beinu, that's to be Makabal, the Messiah, is to receive the Neshama. That's that the Moich, in the highest, deepest, profound thoughts, become somehow, that they somehow are able to infiltrate into you, into who you are, they become part of you. It's a chesed, the word, the fast, that's called halbosha. That's called enclosing. It's a gili, it's a revelation. It's not a ha'ara. Ha'ara means that I didn't understand something, now I understand it. I didn't understand how to put on tefillin, now I understand. That's called malchus, that's ha'ara, beautiful, that's good. That's ha'ara. Halbosha, enclosing means, I don't really know how to explain this to anybody. Why am I right now going to die for God's sake, even though I never put on tefillin? I can't explain it to you. So I received. This is me. It's who I am. That's not called an illumination because he doesn't understand himself. What's that called? It's called halbasha. Halbasha means that the person is enclosed and wrapped. Something was revealed to him on a very deep level that he doesn't know himself. Or he understands something a little bit, but he never really was able to understand how it affects him. Because I'm the deity. I myself, I know, and I might not even know completely until this moment. Look, this is many, many different things. There are two tribes, there are two shvatim that are responsible for teaching Torah to the Jewish people, Shevet Levi and Shevet Yisrael. You ever wonder why do we, well, I mean, you know the Shevet Levi, that it says, Yoram Mishpatech Yaakov, it's the Rosh Yisrael, that they're the teachers of the Jewish people, the tribe of Levi. But then regarding Shevet Yisrael, Yisrael, if you look at the prophets, is also the great masters of Torah. Yodei Bina Le'itim, that they were the ones of great knowledge who taught Torah to the Jewish people. So what's the difference? I would like to spend just a talk about this one time, Mr. Remind me. I would love to talk about this, the difference between Levi and Yisachar. It seems to me that the difference is that the world of Levi is the Moshe Kibbutz Torah Messina Messara Yeshua, it's the Messiah, it's the Chabad entering into entering into that realm of the Chagas and the Nehi of Chesed Gvur Tiferes Netzach Hal Yisod in the way of Halbasha, not Malchus, not necessarily working out all the details of Halacha. Levi is Yom Mishpatecha, Chazal say, HaMishpat Shelcha, the Saroska is HaTorah Shelcha. To give over your Mishpat, your Torah, your greatness. From Levi comes out the Kohen Gadol, the Kohuna, the world of the Ur Metumim, of that amazing way of perception that is not with normal understanding. It's not an academic course. Levi means, the word Levaya means attached, attachment, it means enclosed, it means connected. That's what Levi means. Whereas Yisachar, the tribe of Yisachar is different. It says about Yisachar. So regarding the tribe of Yisachar, there we're told, Ladaz Mayase Yisrael. Yisachar teaches Jews what to do. They're the rabbis. They're teaching the Aleph Beis. They're showing you how to put on the children, how to put the mezuzah on the wall.
Ladas Mayasi Yisrael. That's what it's about Yitzchak. Therefore, in the Torah, when the Torah tells us the blessing of Levi, that they're the masters of Torah, the Torah never tells us in either the brachas of Yaakov or in the brachas of Moshe that Levi had to struggle to achieve greatness in Torah. It doesn't say that. Because Levi's Torah is the Torah that is absorbed in the bone, in the neshama. It's the essence and the soul of who he is. Yisrael, the Torah says, Chamagara. Yisrael, the Torah tells us that Yisrael breaks his back like a donkey carrying the burden of Torah. Because that means the actual Malchus, studying and learning and saying over the Gemara Rashi Tosis, you understand the halacha. Therefore, Yisachar, who teaches Mayasi Yisrael, see, Yisachar is in the realm of struggle, of work. Whereas Levi, it's a receiving, it's a gilui. L'chani megalatam paraduma. I reveal this to you. I reveal in the language of the Chazal that when somebody loves somebody, you tell more secrets. The more you love someone, the more you're prepared to reveal the deepest secrets. So Levi is the one who receives the deepest secrets, kevyochel, of the master of the world. So now let's come to wrap all these things together. Okay. Okay, so let's start now. Let's start now to put things together. The disappearance of the tzaddik and the death of the tzaddik. The disappearance of the tzaddik and the death of the tzaddik. The 17th of Tammuz and the 9th day of Av. The soul of the tzaddik. The soul of the tzaddik, the essence of who the tzaddik is, is not something that he teaches to people. The essence, his moichin, his deepest soul, his deepest awareness, it is, and you can't explain what it is. It is. When you see his eyes, when you're in his presence, you know that it is, and you can't say why, but you know that you don't feel the same thing when you're in university with your professor. It just is. And the tzaddik feels things and is connected to things that are beyond the realm of human speech and articulation. It cannot be articulated, spoken, transmitted, or given in words. It's the deepest point of the spirituality of the tzaddik. And the entire generation is lifted and nurtured and enlivened by the presence of the tzaddik's neshama, his soul, his essence, that can't be spoken. It is. I mentioned this a few weeks ago, you know, I can stand here screaming cracks and yell and talk to you about Yiddishkeit. And I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, how wonderful it would be if the Kleyoker himself would just come here. I don't even say that Arizal, because we'd all have to duck. But if the Kleyoker himself would come over here and would just say, be good Jews. No? He wouldn't even have to say it. That's silly. He doesn't have to even say that. He just has to nod. He has to nod his head a little bit. Like when the Rebbe of Mendel, Rebbe Mendel of Orka, I forgot which tzaddik went to see Rebbe Mendel of Orka, and they spent the entire night. I told you, the chassidim were looking through the door, and they saw Rebbe Mendel of Orka and this other tzaddik, that they were just looking at each other, nodding each other's heads. And after that other tzaddik, I don't remember who it was, came out. Maybe it was the vision. He came out. He says, I never went through such a thing in my entire life. I never saw such a person. I never had such a thing, an encounter like this in my entire life. And now, people can scream and cracks and write books and all kinds of shiurim and seminars. And you know, we still go home the same people. A little bit, you know, maybe a little bit, you think for a few minutes, but the same people. The tzaddik's koach, the tzaddik's soul, the shivosa betamos of the tzaddik. Who can measure, who can understand, who can speak about it? There is such a thing that light of the tzaddik dies. In this world, it stops functioning. There is such a thing. For different reasons, that although he's physically alive, his neshama has gone to a different place, has entered to a different realm to do different things for us. Different things. That's the siluk of the tzaddik. And that's more horrible, it's more tragic, the Kleyoka says, it's more tragic than the destruction of the temple, than the absence of the spiritual light of the Beis HaMikdash. The siluk of the tzaddik. But the tzaddik physically can go on living. His teachings, his academic accomplishments will go on. He wrote books, there's svarim, He might even go on talking to you about certain things. But the neshama is not there anymore. When the Torah stops, when the tzaddik physically dies, that's called the mitzvah tzaddik, the death of the tzaddik, and then the physical life of the Jewish people is crushed by the absence of the physical presence of the tzaddik. So, ki mitzion teitzei soro dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Ki mitzion teitzei soro means there is a light that shines from Yerushalayim. It doesn't say that we learn Torah in Sion. Ki mitzion teitzei. Teitzei means there it radiates from Sion. The message of Hashem is being radiated from Yerushalayim. You can't explain what is it that Yerushalayim does for us. If you haven't been there, if you don't study Gemara, if you don't study the Chazals, the Medrash, if you didn't read the Tanakh, if you're not connected to Yerushalayim, who can explain to you that Yerushalayim looks different than other cities? That the way of learning Torah in Yerushalayim is different? When a parent says to me, but Rabbi, there's so many yeshivas in New York, why does he have to go to yeshiva in Yerushalayim? Why does she have to go back to yeshiva? There's so many good yeshivas here. So can you explain to somebody? What is the difference between sitting in a yeshiva in Yerushalayim looking out the window and seeing Yerushalayim and sitting in a yeshiva over here and looking out and seeing Queens Boulevard? It's not something that can be contained in words. It's not something, it's a Messiah Kahu. It's in the vein, it's in the bones, it's in the neshama, it's the ur of Yerushalayim, it's Kimitzion Teitzei Sar, it's the radiation. It radiates that. In addition to that, Udvar Hashem in Yerushalayim, the words of Hashem are spoken in Yerushalayim. The Dvar means Dibur. There are great lessons and teachers in Yerushalayim to teach Torah. That's secondary. So the 17th of Tammuz is the Churban HaBayis. The Churban HaBayis means the disappearance of the light, the spiritual energy left at that time. Even though the physical stones were still intact, when you look at that Rambam, when you look at the Rambam, which is the Gemara, when you look at the Rambam again in Hilchos Tanis, so the 17th of Tammuz, Nishtabru Halukos, the Lukos were broken. Okay. Nobody died. Anybody die? I mean, there was a problem, you know, because we were misbehaving, so we had to, but the Lukos were broken wasn't the Holocaust. But the Lukos were broken. We understand what that means, that since then we don't remember Torah properly. It's the breaking of the heart of the Jewish people. It's the breaking of the soul. It's the loss. It's a disappearance of light. It's a disappearance of light. Of awareness. It's the histalkus hamoichin. It's the higher awareness retreating. Going back, disappearing. It's the backwards movement. From Yesod and Hod and Netzach back up all the way retreating to the world of Chabad. Back into that mysterious world of the higher way that we don't have in this world anymore. That's what's happening. The breaking of the lukos and the bottle, and we stop bringing the sacrifice. We can no longer bring the sacrifice. You hear? We're not talking about anybody getting killed. The wall of Yerushalayim was penetrated, was broken. The burning of the Torah, the placing of an idol in the Beis HaMikdash. All the things that took place on the 17th day of Tammuz, all the things that took place equals the disappearance, the concealment of the light of the tzaddik of the universe, who's Hashem. The death of the tzaddik. I told you this last year, if it wouldn't say in Chazal, I would be afraid to say it, but the mourning during this time of Tisha B'Av is kemesa mutum l'lefan, if it's as if the dead person is lying in front of you. And the simple meaning of Chazal is, who is it that's dead? Kivyachal, we feel in a certain way because of Hashem's concealment, chas v'chalila, that something of Hashem's presence in our lives has left since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But that's the 17th of Tammuz. Understand that the 17th of Tammuz is the disappearance of the light, the burning of Torah, the breaking of Luchos, the idol, the defiling of the temple. It's all a very sublime spiritual massacre. A spiritual massacre. On that level of the depth of the Creator's heart and of our hearts. And Tisha B'Av is when the physical destruction took place. Now why is it that that's the main day of Avelis, is Tisha B'Av, which I spoke about that the whole time last year. So now understand, this is just very quickly to finish up. We began with the question of why is this period of time called Ben Hametzarim, between the tragedies. These days between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av are called between the tragedies. Ben Hametzarim. Except Shabbos. Shabbos is not. Shabbos is an achla of Bli Mitzar. Shabbos, there's no narrowness. Shabbos, these Shabbos is according to the Tzaddikim of the most holy Shabbos of the whole year, these Shabbos. Nachla Bli Mitzar. The Dafka, these Shabbos is of these weeks you feel most how without Shabbos there's no life. That's a separate discussion. But it's called Ben Hamitzar. So the Magen Avraham says because they're Yemei Peronius, because they're days of tragedies. And the Gros says, the Vilna Gaon says that they're Yemei Avelus. And the question was, okay, we understand this, Peronius, difficult things happen, but what's the Avelus? There was, on the 70th of Tammuz, certain bad things happen. So we mourn those bad things and we have a fast day. This is the 70th of Tammuz. Fine. Then the 9th of Av, terrible things happen, we have a fast day to mourn what happened the 9th of Av. What are we mourning about during the, what exactly are we mourning about in between? So the answer, I think, is we're mourning that from the 17th of Tammuz, from that time when the soul of the tzaddik of the universe, the master of the world, was killed, and the soul departed from the temples of the Beis HaMikdash, and the tzaddik died, the ruach, the nesham, the building was still there. For 3 weeks after the soul had left, there was this lingering of the body, kiviyachal, of the body of the Beis HaMikdash, that the light was traveling, the point of Malchus was getting smaller and smaller, the presence of Hashem in the universe was getting tinier, the higher awareness was pulling out, was retreating day by day in 21 horrible stages, retreating moment by moment. Every moment of the 3 weeks is Avelus, because every moment means that the life force and energy that at least sustains the body of Malchus in this world that we should at least live as Jews was withdrawing, was leaking, was slipping away. It was a slow death. The neshama left, but the body lingered. And with the lingering of the body, there can at least still be malchus, there can at least still be buildings and mikvahs and yeshivas, and we could try to learn. But during those 3 weeks, slowly, once the neshama was gone, it was a matter of time. And the lingering and the slow, painful death of Knesset Yisrael and of the master of the world as he lives with us in this world, that's what happened. So now we understand why the Rambam is so upset and why he includes all of this, the mistake about Bar Kokhba with Mashiach. Why does he include the whole lineage of Mashiach over here, the mistake that was made, that the Rambam says, the Rambam should have stopped by saying that thousands of Jews died. Therefore, it's a day of mourning. That's one another reason why Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning, because thousands of Jews were killed in Beitar, in the city of Beitar. That would be enough. Why does he have to tell us and that the great Chachamim made a mistake with Bar Kokhba, that they thought he was Mashiach, he wasn't Mashiach? So I think the answer is, without going into it in any depth that it deserves, I'm already keeping you too long. I think that the answer is that Bar Kokhba definitely did have the soul of Mashiach. He definitely did. If you think Rabbi Akiva was making a mistake, please don't mix Rabbi Akiva up with some very sweet fools that are running around with their posters and Irish guy to know how they carried on for these past few years about Mashiach. We're talking about Rabbi Akiva. We're talking about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva saw in Bar Kokhba, Dorach Koichev Meyakov, the star that was shining from the Jew, from Yaakov, and it must be that Bar Kokhba had the most remarkable, illuminated soul of Mashiach. It must be! Kol Yisrael and the Gedolei Yisrael, led by Rabbi Akiva himself. He had the soul, he had the moichin, the awareness, it was there. But the Malchus was shattered. The Malchus was destroyed on the day of Tisha B'Av, which is the destruction of Malchus. That Bar Kokhba couldn't unfold into being Mashiach. It didn't happen. It couldn't be. The Tzaddik could not become Mashiach. He couldn't. He died. His presence as Mashiach in the world became smaller and smaller until it was snuffed out on the day of Tisha B'Av, the day of the destruction of the building. That he couldn't be Mashiach L'maisa. And all that he was retreated back to the mysterious world, into that chamber of Mashiach as it exists in the higher world. And now I think we could try to understand why is it that during this time of Ben HaMetzarim, that's the time when the Ari HaKadosh died. The Arizal died on the fifth day of Ben HaMetzarim. He died during that time in between the spiritual death and the physical death. That's when the Ari HaKadosh died. This probably itself should be discussed at great length. Let me just tell you how the Ari HaKadosh died. I mean, the way it says in the Sefer Emek HaMelech, there are two traditions of what happened, of what led to the death of the Ari. It's really the same. But I'm going to give you over the narrative of the Emek HaMelech, of what happened to the Ari HaKadosh. The Emek HaMelech tells us that Reb Chaim Vital, his greatest student, Reb Chaim Vital, did not understand a certain teaching of the Zohar, and he was with the other students of the Ari. Reb Chaim Vital asked the Ari HaKadosh to reveal to him the mystery of that piece of the Zohar. And the Ari HaKadosh said to him, I cannot. And Reb Chaim Vital persisted. He refused to give in, and he said, I beg of the Rebbe to teach me this teaching of the Zohar. What does it mean? And for reasons that are too mysterious for people like us to even dare contemplate, the Ari HaKadosh said that he had no choice. He was forced to reveal this mystery. After he revealed this mystery to Reb Chaim Vital in the presence of the other students, he told them to gather together their wives and children and to go to a certain chotzer, to a certain courtyard of Tzfas. We are told that during that time that their families were all gathered in that courtyard, that a fight broke out between some of the women. We don't know what it was about. But we know that the Ari HaKadosh said, a pasuk, the meaning of the pasuk, I don't remember the pasuk the second, but the meaning of the pasuk is, your Mashiach has died and you too have died. And then he went, he lied down, and he died. That was the end of the Ari HaKadosh. That's the fifth day of Av. In the time, Ben HaMetzarim. Ben HaMetzarim. You know, the Ari HaKadosh and Reb Chaim Vital was like Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua. But what the Ari had to give to the Reb Chaim Vital had to be given. The Reb Chaim Vital wanted to be taught. And he wanted to be taught in the presence of students who were not on that level. It wasn't the time for Malchus. And the Arizal said, it's not, I can't now. And Reb Chaim Vital said, please Rebbe, you must. And for reasons we don't know, the Ari did. He died a young man. There were certain things, there were certain secrets that had to be given over in a different way, and they were taught, and they shouldn't have been taught. And they were taught in the presence of people who weren't prepared for them. And Ari said, I can no longer live in this world. And he left. That's how he died. Now, what do you and I have from Arizal? Lemaise, as far as learning Torah goes, I hope we have very little, because we're not holding by it. So what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to go out and buy some ridiculous Kabbalistic book and just try to read, and try to figure out the Arizal said without knowing how to read Hebrew? No. So we don't have what to learn so much from the Ari. The limud, the academic limud of what he had to do, Hamalame Torah, on the level of Malchus, we don't have the Malchus of the Ari. Just like we don't have Mashiach yet. We don't have the Arizal's Malchus. But in the Shom of the Ari, what he gave over to us, that because of the Ari HaKadosh, you and I know that there's something more mysterious in our lives that we're not connecting to, that's the Ari HaKadosh gave us. That we can go to his, at least to try when we next assault, to go to his grave, to daven by his grave, we for sure can touch that. And we could be touched by that. We can't study by him, but we can receive from him. We can't understand him, but we can receive his splendor. We could tan ourselves to his beauty and his greatness. We could be lifted by his greatness, by his name. The Baal Tanya had a complaint about the Vilna Gaon that he said in a very respectful way, that the Vilna Gaon did not accept everything from the teachings of the Ari. It seems that the Baal Tanya was right. There are certain things that the Vilna Gaon, especially in one area of Kabbalah, the Vilna Gaon seemed to have departed from the way, it seems to us, it seemed to the Baal Tanya, I wouldn't say us, the Baal Tanya, that he had departed, the Vilna Gaon had departed from the teachings of the Ari. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the greatest student of the Vilna Gaon, was deeply, deeply hurt by that accusation. And he wrote in his Sefer, in the introduction to the Sefer, the Tznayis, he wrote that you should know, that it should be known to the entire world,
that any time that my Rebbe, the Vilna Gaon, so much as uttered the holy name of the Ari, his entire body trembled and it looked as if he was literally going to die from fear and awe of the Ari. That's the Vilna Gaon. That's the Vilna Gaon. So, let's try to be people who are more connected to Messiah. Let's try to give over good things. Let's not be people who, especially during this time of the year, who, in order to find our way back to Hashem, we have to hear 1,000 answers for 1,000 questions. You know that if we're just natural and simple and pure, the way that the Divine Shalom delivered us into this world, it would be just fine. It would be just fine. Without chachmas. Without chachmas. It's the biggest chachma. Just to receive. To receive from the earlier generations. Every little minhag, every custom, to receive it. To absorb it. To take it in. Without understanding, if you understand it, it's wonderful. And if you don't understand it, maybe it's even more wonderful. Not that we're supposed to be God forbid Amarat. That we're not supposed to learn. But to receive, to absorb, to suck in the beauty of Yiddishkeit. To suck in the beauty of Yiddishkeit. And to do that, you have to be a little bit, you have to spend time in Yerushalayim. You have to try to make an effort to go see a tzaddik, to go be in the presence of tzaddikim. You can't become this person of Mesorah by sitting in your little corner of the world. You cannot. You could soak in as much as you can from the storm, but you have to fall on your knees to visit the Ari. To visit, and to be in Eretz Yisrael, and to be with tzaddikim, to be in the place of greatness, to receive from the splendor of the tzaddikim. To receive from the splendor of Yerushalayim, not just the Torah of Yerushalayim, the splendor of Yerushalayim. To watch a tzaddik daven. Ubez Hashem, we should be zoicha. Kol mesavel Yerushalayim zoicha. Veroi b'simchasa. Whoever mourns the destruction of Yerushalayim will be worthy to rejoice at the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. May we be worthy to feel within ourselves the rebuilding of all that was lost. And may Kadosh Baruch Hu give back to all of us all that was taken. And we should be zoicha, Mitzvah Hashem, to see the soul and the body of Mashiach quickly in our days, and the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash in its soul and in its body. There's an important discussion, an announcement that Avi would like to make. So please, you could wait a minute. A question? Okay. There's a question. Yeah.